Welcome to the very first Tech Gundu podcast. My name is Alfred from Tech Gundu. With me today is Grace, my colleague here at Tech Gundu. Today we're going to discuss two topics that have been in the news in the past couple of weeks. The first is O-Bike, the bike sharing company that abruptly closed its app and left Singapore last week. Users are asking for deposits they have placed with O-Bike. Government agencies are asking for unpaid fines. What's going on here? The second topic is on the mobile market in Singapore. With more players coming in, users are getting more choices and better prices. The question is, can this last? We'll examine these two topics in this week's podcast. Let's start with the first topic, O-Bike. So what happens now with the users who have placed their deposits with O-Bike? What are the chances of them getting the deposits back?
Well, the news report says that O-Bike has lost over $4 million. That means that it has now gone into liquidation. The first people who will be paid are likely the lawyers and the accountants who are providing the liquidation services. Then after that, the liquidators will prioritize the repayments.
Even the government agencies are looking for payments for their fines, right? And you know, for the cost involved in you know, removing the bikes, you know, so users are going to be like the last people who can demand for money, basically.
Yeah, the investors have already given up because they know that they invested in a startup. They're unlikely to get their money back. But for consumers who paid deposits, unless the company decides to pay them, there is unlikely they will get their deposits back. However, the news reports say that the founder, Shi Yi, will pay himself, will repay the investors, will repay the consumers himself.
You know, what does it say about bike sharing services? In China, for example, we've seen the bubble burst there last year when the third biggest bike sharing company went bust. You know, there have been news reports of, you know, at least one of these companies using the deposits, or possibly using the deposits in money markets because it's sitting on so much cash from the deposits, right? What does it say about this bike sharing models? You know, it seems that bike service may not be like the main thing that's being offered, and the main business model seems to be getting money from the deposits that users are providing.
I guess it is a buyer beware, user beware situation. You need to go in with your eyes open. And how much does it cost? What is the deposit? I think in Singapore, it was something like $19 for students, $49 for others. So if you are a real user in the sense that the bike has taken you from one point to another and you use it frequently, I guess you will find that it's money well used. If you're not, then at the end of the day, would you put $49 just to use the bike for once a week?
Yeah, I think that's the issue with a lot of these new startups and you know, what you call platform companies that provide like an online platform for people to order food, you know, to get a service. You know, there's been a lot of criticism. The romantic notion of them, this sharing economy, basically has gone, right? This idea of optimizing resources, along with these very big, well-funded companies, you know, along with the benefits they bring, are also a lot of societal impact. I think with bike sharing, the first thing we saw, obviously, is convenience. You know, the last, so-called very last mile from MRT station to your home. The downside of that is that you know, people have to bear with the eyesore of abandoned bikes, you know, everywhere they go. You know, ironically, it was a result of this that the LTA, the Land Transport Authority in Singapore, had asked all the bike companies to start, you know, cleaning up, and this was the reason cited by O-Bike for leaving, because it couldn't, you know, abide by these rules.
I think it's governance. At the end of the day, the companies must provide good governance. And I guess, like all consumers who want to buy things, you would want to be assured that there's a return policy. For example, if I buy furniture from a furniture maker, I want to be able to know that I can return it if it is not up to spec.
But with a startup, there's no such thing, right? I mean, there's no warranty or return policy. In fact, you know, as shown by this this episode, you know, the risk of doing business with a startup, you know, it's almost the same as the risk of investing in it. Obviously, we don't lose millions of dollars if it's just users. But, you know, there's sort of an associated risk that we're taking with dealing with these startups, right?
Yeah, and that's the challenge of a technology-based businesses today. Mm. It brings a lot of convenience. It removes a lot of friction in your daily lives. It makes it more convenient for us.
Yeah, I think unfortunately, I mean, there's this idea that when they fail, you know, somehow we have to pay for it. And in this sense, it's not just monetary cost. You know, with bike sharing, for example, you know, who's going to pay for the clearing of the bikes now, right? You know, the authorities have said they're going to clear it first and claim the money back from O-Bike. But, you know, there's not even anybody else. There's nobody in the office now. And they're overseas now. You wonder how much money the tourists can get back. And, you know, my worry is that, you know, when these startups fail, they're on such a big scale, they have such great impact that, you know, even those people who are not users end up paying the cost. I mean, you and I, you know, everybody...
As taxpayers, we will have to bear some of this cost, yeah. So I think that it's a dilemma for everyone, for users as well as for government, regulators as well. Where do they draw the line? Mm. How tightly do you want the rules? If you want the rules to be so tight, then
they got no innovation.
It makes it difficult for the business, for the new business, for the new idea to take hold.
Right.
If you have no rules... then the reverse happens,
right.
And consumers have no protection.
Do you think that Singapore, you know, we've always liked to think of ourselves as like a living lab or testing lab for new technologies, right? Do you find that in this case, you know, basically users here have been the, you know, guinea pigs or they've been unfortunate sort of test subjects, you know, for this service and they've had to pay the price as a result?
I think if you look at other... sharing economy kind of business here. I think Grab has proven to be useful. Airbnb has also proven to be useful.
Wait, Airbnb is not here yet.
Well, they're here yet in a sense. But you know, it's unfortunate that O-Bike has given the sharing economy a bad name. But generally, things have gone on quite well. Again, you know, you look at the company, a company like Grab, and you look at the people who are behind it, you know that they are, they have good governance, and they do take care of customers.
Yeah, I'm grateful I don't have to, I don't know, call the taxi companies again, you know, and there's a lot more options now. You know, but still, speaking about Grab and Uber, which exited several months ago, you know, it was the same thing for a lot of people, right? Suddenly, they happened overnight and they were not prepared for it. And, you know, there was also cost for some drivers, for example, who had sort of, you know, hoped that Uber would continue their promos, you know, for users as well. You know, suddenly overnight, you know, they lost an option, right? You know, that's the thing about this startup. I think it's not that they don't provide benefits, in my view. It's just that you know, very often when they leave, and there's no, you know, stopping them. Or in fact, they're so hard to regulate.
In a sense, they're all businesses, right? So if they find that the business model doesn't work, they will just pack up and go.
Yeah, but a bank can't pack up and go. Or, you know, a telco can't pack up and go.
Well, you have new banks, digital banks who can pack up and go.
Right.
But, okay, so it depends on what industry we're talking about. If you're talking about heavily regulated industry like finance, then, you know, the regulations and the governance are much tougher.
But transport is tightly regulated, right? I mean, when it comes to bus providers, train providers, I mean, these guys, they have the same sort of impact as, you know, other transport providers. But because they are a digital company, it seems that they get a freer rein, right? In the name of innovation.
Well, in the sense that they don't own any hardware. They have no assets. Their only asset is the software. And they're using the software to run a business. In the case of ride hailing, they're now into delivery, you know, and other things as well.
I think the question is, you know, can regulators have done more? In this case, obviously, you know, it's too late. You know, despite all these protestations from the authorities, the town councils asking Obike to pay the fines, and you know, the LTA asking them to pay for the recovery of the bikes. You know, the question is, who are they going to approach, right? The offices are shuttered, you know, they're gone. Well, I mean, if they pay, it's probably in a, you know, out of good will or good.
The question I would ask is, can we do due diligence on the founders? That is also difficult to say. If you are, would you have done due diligence on Mark Zuckerberg when he was 18 years old?
Right.
Would you have done due diligence on Bill Gates when he was 16 years old and he founded Microsoft? You know, they all dropped out of college.
So it's hard.
So it's hard, you know. But
could the regulators have seen what's happening overseas, for example, like in the Uber and in the Uber example, right? They exited China, and straight after that, the prices for taxis shot up. In the case of bike sharing, last year, you know, we've seen pictures of these bikes being abandoned all over China. In fact, the problem is much worse there.
Yeah.
Could the regulators have done something? Obviously, it's all, you know, hindsight now. But, you know, going forward with new platform economy sort of companies coming in,
I think it's
just
not
thinking whether they could look overseas more proactively.
I think this abandonment and vandalism, something to do with society. I mean, it happens overseas as well, where your bikes are abandoned. But in Singapore, I guess because we are smaller, we see them all over the place.
Yeah, our parks are so nice.
Yeah, and then you find that abandoned bikes with missing handlebars, missing seats, you know. So I think we still have to learn a little bit more about the sharing economy, you know.
Yeah, I think there's a saying, you can't have good things if you don't behave yourself, right? So
I think it takes both sides. I think the regulators have to come in and look from a bigger picture overall how it benefits Singapore. And it is a fine balance that they have to walk all the time. How do you regulate so that businesses have freedom to do new things and also protect consumers? And on the consumer part, how do you want to use these new things? How will it benefit you? So I guess...
buyer beware, basically.
Yeah, buyer beware.
Okay. Okay, that's great. So I want to move on to the next topic on the mobile market in Singapore. Grace, what do you see happening in the market in recent months?
I think the best thing for consumers is the prices are now affordable. So if you're a big data consumer, I mean, you download stuff, you stream stuff, I think there are now so many plans that you can subscribe to. The biggest thing about the competition is that now data has become cheap.
Yeah, and I think there are also many options now, right? Since the big three have come up with new data plans, there's a lot more flexibility. You don't have to just sign a 2-year contract for, you know, what used to be the 5 same plans among the 3 operators.
Now you just look at, going back to this thing about data, you look at M1's data passport that allows you to roam, do data roaming with your data plan. I think that is a good innovation. For me personally, when I travel, I travel with Singtel's roaming plan. And I think what Singtel and other telcos are trying to do is to cap your data spending.
Right.
So you don't come back after 2 weeks overseas with a $1,000.
No bill shock, basically.
Yeah, no bill shock.
Yeah. I think that was one of the big things about data plans in the past. You know, I'm a user of Amazon's data passport. And when I go overseas nowadays, it's a standard now. When I go to Japan, I think it's about $25 turn on fee. And, you know, you can basically use it as you were using in Singapore. And, you know, there have been so many innovations in the past couple of years, which is a far cry from, you know, when 4G was first launched 4 years ago. You know, back then it was quite bad, right? I mean, as I recall, it was like, you know, all three telcos wanted to raise prices for 4G services. It was almost cartel-like, right? I mean, one raised price and the other two tried to follow.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, for you, what's like the standout sort of innovation besides data plans?
I think it's the choice and flexibility of all the plans. You can unbundle, you can boost your data, you can opt for, you know, plan today that fits your consumption. Let's say 1 month you're doing a big project that requires a lot of downloading of stuff. You can just boost 1 month. And then you go back to your normal plan.
In fact, the Circles Live can boost like per day, three.
Yeah, I think Circles Live brought innovation in data, and what they also brought is the customer loyalty. So if you are a loyal customer for, I can't remember whether it's 6 months or 12 months, I think when it first started, every 3 months they will give you 1 gig of data free.
Yeah.
I think that's a good incentive, you know, and that was a retention a plan to do that. I think initially the three telcos, the incumbents, didn't quite consider Circles Life a competitor until all of these came up.
I get the sense that they like to fight amongst themselves, the three of them. They look at Circles Life, which is a small player with, I believe not more than 10% of the market, and they look at them and they probably think, okay, you know, I'll let this guy have a small chunk of the market and we can continue doing our thing, right? But I think their concern probably is the fourth telco, which is TPG Telecom, which has its own network, unlike Circles Life and MyRepublic, which is leasing the network from one of them. They've done very well actually for consumers in the past couple of years.
MyRepublic as an MVNO
three big ones. Singtel, for example, has launched, you know, very customizable plans. They have launched unlimited plans after M1 started. So they are still matching each other there. If you are a heavy user, basically you can pay a fee now. It's unlimited. And I think there are a lot of, you know, the good thing now is there are a lot of little not loopholes, but the advantages that you can take. For example, with Singtel, the unlimited plan can be shared, you know, with family members. You can pay, I think, $10 more per month for each member, and then they can all ride on the unlimited calls, SMSs, and data on one main plan. Up to three people can share.
I think this was a response to StarHub's hubbing. Because StarHub's hubbing had been
long past,
but that was a very successful campaign.
Yes.
To today, I know of friends who will hub, you know, and they save like 20-30% of their costs.
So there is space for this kind of innovations. I mean, speaking of StarHub, when they first came in 2000, when the market was liberalized, they were the third mobile operator. They brought a lot of new things, right? As I recall, they offered per second billing. That means you pay, you know, by the second instead of by the minute. That saved people a lot of money. They brought free incoming calls. I mean, we take it for granted now, but back then it was the first, right?
Yeah.
And so now, you know, for consumers, it's a great thing that, you know, you get data boosters by the day. You know, you get unlimited data again, and you get all these roaming deals. So I think in the past couple of years, it's been very good. The question is, you know, would things get better if the fourth telco, you know, which is TPG Telecom, come on board? We have talked about it. We've, however, heard very little from them. The last I hear from at least my sources in the industry is that they are busily looking for you know, places, sites to install the antennas, their base stations. That's proving to be a pretty challenging thing, I'm told.
Yeah, and I don't know whether they'll be able to get a service up by December 2018, which is their requirement under their new license. They have, as the new boy in town, as new player in town, I think they will have to really offer new plans to capture at least a small part of the market. At the moment, I think roughly it is Singtel has 40, and then the
40 plus,
and then
almost half that.
And then StarHub and M1 will have about another 40, you know, and then the rest is the smaller players.
It's a saturated market.
It's a saturated market. Very hard to get Well, consumers, I guess, will benefit because, you know, maybe you will get plans, you get cheaper plans. But what about the players? It doesn't make sense if TBG, after 2 years, find that they can't make money, right? So they pull out. So what does it mean for consumers?
Well, the shares for telcos are not doing that well recently. It's been challenging you know, in terms of revenue-wise for StarHub, for example, right? I mean, it's because of the competition. You know, what would TPG do? You know, it seems like low-hanging fruit have all been plucked. And, you know, all the players now are really innovating very hard, finding all the little niche.
In March, they announced a special package for the elderly. You know,
but LDs are not a big spender.
But it's not a big they are not big consumers of data.
Right.
You know, or we may be wrong because they are watching they are free.
Okay,
right?
Yeah.
They may be watching your Korean dramas. You know, for all you know. So, but that's a niche market. What else can you do? So
I think with Circus Live and with MyRepublic, the business model is pretty simple or straightforward. With Circles Live, it's clear that okay, you know, they offer consumer service. That's one, but you know, part of the business is to sort of sell their expertise or the telco software, you know, to other telcos. Right, that's one of the stated business models.
Yeah, I think that what Circles Live brought was just data. They showed that you can play a game, you know, a mobile game with data.
I mean, they can lose money there.
They can lose money there.
They can still make money from selling their software
because bandwidth is really cheap today, you know.
Yep.
But if they want to sell their software, then I will think about it because their customer service sucks and everything is done by online.
Okay. Still want a human touch.
And rarely can you get somebody on the line because there's no phone number to call. I was.
Oh, okay. Share the experience.
For 1 year, I subscribed to it. I think the best thing is the data.
Okay.
For the extra data as a loyal a customer, every 3 months you get 1 gig. So at one point I was paying probably like, I can't remember, nearly $30 for 5 gigs.
So if you want help, you have to go through the app. Is there someone to call or?
You have to go through the app and everything is online.
Okay.
And they do really try to be friendly in the sense that, hello, how are you today? I hope you're having a great day. How can I help you? You know, but when I wanted to stop the service, it took me about 2 months to stop the service.
Two months? What did you have to go through?
Because they want to check. First, they will try and convince you over a few days not to stop the service. Then after that, they would check and see, oh, you have to finish this month and pay this month's bill before you know. So that process will drag on, you know, 4 weeks, 6 weeks before you finally stop the service. And after they stop the service, doesn't mean that you will you get cut off, right? Yes, but you still receive their newsletters and their updates, you know, which at the end of the day, for a customer, it becomes spam.
Right. I think, that brings me to the point about customer service. Okay, I mean, all this innovation in service offerings, you know, prices, you know, sometimes customer service is an unspoken, you know, X factor, right? For me, I've stayed with M1 for for many, many years. I was with StarHub briefly, with their hubbing plan. I kind of flirted with StarHub for a few years. But Edmund has been with, I've been with Edmund for like, you know, almost as long as they've been around, actually. And one thing that stood out for me is the service, customer service. And when I call, you know, there's someone always ready to help. You know, not that I call very often, but for me, that's a huge difference. In fact, you know, all these things that you hear about in customer service case studies, right? But I've actually experienced it myself. When I call, somebody proactively tells me, hey, you know, why don't you change a plan? In fact, I was trying to cut a plan, you know, and I was persuaded to keep it, not because it was a smooth-talking person online, but because it convinced me that if I were to get a separate plan, it would cost more. And you know, and I can't get like phone discounts and all that. So because I was a multi-line plan with M1, my whole family is on it, my fiber broadband is on it, I get a lot of discounts. So when I cut that plan, if I sign up again, I won't get the same discounts. So I thought that was great advice that, you know, while he fulfilled his KPI to keep me as customer, you know, it's also good good service that's useful for customers.
Yeah, and so I have also been on Singtel since mobile days, which is what, 20 years, I guess, you know,
20 plus years,
right? And so I have no issues. Customer service has been there. You go to their comm center stores, their people are helpful. So I think we could be old fashioned because we still need, like, we still like to talk to somebody.
I'm not that old.
But I think that the online customer support, not only in Singapore, but I think around the world, needs to improve much, much better. Yeah.
Yeah, that's the thing. That's the I think irony. Sometimes we talk so much about, you know, being empowered by the app, but you know, and the AI, you know, I think that's going to transform and change in the coming years for sure. You know, I'm already very happy nowadays. I can change so many things on my app. You know, I can set up my roaming, I can switch plans, I can delete things. You know, but sometimes when you really need help, you know, you still want the human voice.
Yeah, and not only that, because our kind of problems, or maybe it's a kind of problems we face, are so specific that we need to talk to somebody about it, you know. But I think generally the three telcos are the three incumbents generally have good customer service.
Yeah, we need to get someone from who is on StarHub to come and talk on the show.
Yeah.
Right. The question then is, you know, since we're having such a good deal here for consumers, right? You know, and you know, we see the problems that in terms of revenue wise for the telcos. You know, the question is how long this can continue. You know, we've seen this before in the past when the iPhone was first launched. I think what is it, 10 years?
2007. Right. 10 years ago.
When it was first launched, all three telcos rushed in with data plans that were, you know, they call it a 12 gig plan, which is, you know, you get 12 gigs for really very little money, right? You know, they rushed in and then after a while, they kind of pulled back and they cut back on the data and all that. So now they're at it again with the competition. Do you think we go through a cycle? You know, how long can this last? You know, what happens if TBG doesn't do well?
I think that there is bandwidth is not an issue, so data is not an issue. The question is profit margin. How much profit, how much margin do you want to keep for yourself? So this is a commodity business. So all the telcos will face the same issue of commodity business, and that is their declining profits and declining revenues.
So what's the deal for consumers then? Should we quickly, you know, lap up these good deals before, you know, kind of the cycle goes again?
I think you look for the deal that suits you best. Yeah. I think for you, your Singtel Unlimited and M1. Your M1 Unlimited and sharing with...
Mine's not unlimited, unfortunately.
Is it M1 sharing, they call it?
No. Actually, the unlimited sharing one is from Singtel. Yeah, M1, mine is on the multi-line, so I get a discount for my subscriptions every month.
And so this 35%. Is how, yeah, and so this is how the telcos, in a sense, lock you in. They give you this upfront discount for multi-lines.
For your loyalty.
For your loyalty as well. And because you take different services from them, They will give you the upfront discount. Mm. So if you're enjoying a good discount, mm. Are you happy with it? If you are, then I guess there's no reason to change.
Mm. I'm not sure there'll be significant churn when yeah. when I know some people have left for, you know, Circles Life or yeah. maybe even MyRepublic, you know, but.
But there are people who do have two lines.
Oh yeah.
Because one is for work and maybe one is for play, and also because it is cheap, you know, and if you want to consume data without anyone knowing, you can always take up a second line,
yeah,
right?
We're so saturated now, the market.
Yeah.
You know, I, you know, speaking of loyalty, I mean, folks like me, for example, you know, I've had four lines. I got fiber. If we're all tied to M1.
Yeah.
It would take at least like 1.5 years before the contracts all run out, even if I wanted to move. What does it mean for TPG when it comes in?
It's so hard to convert people, and unless they
at great cost,
unless they sacrifice their profit margin,
mm.
you know, and in the short term, and hopefully, you know, gain some a customer base, and then in the long term. They might benefit. But if they are just going to offer the usual mobile services,
yeah.
then it's going to be a hard runway for them.
I think it's tough also because they are coming in with costs that the other three won't have. They will be you know, coming on the back of all that hundreds of millions of network costs that they have to somehow bear.
And they have to... Well, we are almost into 5G. For them to come into 4G and then upgrade to 5G, it's going to be a tremendous cost.
Right.
So if they're going to jump straight into 5G, it's again going to be tremendous cost.
Yeah.
So, you know...
I think the network cost is going to be quite prohibitive.
Yeah. Will it? So the question to ask then is, why is TPG coming to Singapore? What is on their agenda?
They've been very quiet. They have not said much. You know, months before they're supposed to launch anything, we have not really heard, not heard much beyond the elderly plans that we've briefly shared. And meanwhile, people are, you know, the telcos here are already doing a very good job innovating, and consumers are already picking their operators. You know, it's going to be very, very tough. I mean, all the low-hanging fruit has been picked.
Yeah, so we know that Circles Life, one of their objective is to sell the telco software that they are developing.
Yeah.
For MyRepublic, it is expansion
yes.
in Singapore and in Indonesia
yes.
is one step towards closer to an IPO.
Yes.
So for TPG, what is on the agenda? And that is what we don't know.
And I think that's the question, right? You know, with other countries, we've seen them open up to new players, and then, you know, some of them are merged back into the same number of operators in the past. So, you know, I'm just wondering whether that would be something that we should look out for. As consumers, we just enjoy it.
Yeah. So Singapore is going counterintuitive, right? We're going from 3 to 4. Is it oversaturation for the market? Does it make business sense for the fourth telco? I think from the government's point of view, competition is always good. If somebody is willing to pick up the license and pay for the bandwidth,
right.
why not?
Yeah, speaking of that, we forgot about the cost of the airwaves that TPG paid.
How much was it? 150 million? Or?
Over 100 million.
Yeah, over 100
which
million.
Which was too much for MyRepublic, which dropped out. And I think MyRepublic is realizing that it's dodged a bullet. It's a blessing in disguise.
As an MVNO, it is really...
yeah.
It benefits, right?
In fact, if it wants...
Yeah.
You know, I think a lot of times people go on IPO, they want to do something big, you know, to show that they you know, they're worthy of the IPO. Mm. But actually sometimes, you know, I think in this case, especially for MyRepublic, I think they have dodged a bullet, you know. The cost won't be so cheap. I mean, they have been half a billion dollars in debt.
So now they are, you know, they're renting, so to speak, the infrastructure
right.
from StarHub. They are using their own software, their
right.
own capability they have already developed, maybe add a little bit more.
Mm.
So they're not really out of pocket that much.
Yeah, I think a lot more lean, a lot more customer focus.
Yeah.
not so much cost focus. Okay.
Write to us what you like or don't like about this show. I'm Grace at techgundu.com.
Alfred at techgundu.com. Thank you very much again for listening. And do go to our website at techgundu.com. That's spelled T-E-C-H-G-O-N-D-U.com. Thank you very much.
Thank you.